Hello and welcome. This is Couples Counseling for Parents, a show about couple relationships, how they work, why they don't, what you can do to fix what's broken.
Here are our parents,
our dad, Dr. Stephen Mitchell,
and our mom, Erin Mitchell.
Hello and thanks for joining us on Couples Counseling for Parents. I'm Dr. Stephen Mitchell.
I'm Erin Mitchell.
And on today's show, we will be discussing how your home environment has shaped you to your core.
Thrilling.
Thrilling. Well, I think maybe this is, well, not maybe this is why, but this is why I was thinking about this. So in the last, I don't know, month or so, I've done a couple of reels where I've made the comment, you know, if you grew up in a critical home environment, this is how that might be impacting your couple relationship, or if you grew up in a high conflict home environment, this is how it might be impacting your couple relationship. And part of that is because I grew up in a critical home environment, high conflict home environment. And I think doing those reels just made me kind of become aware.
I think it said remember.
Remember or re-become aware. Another synonym for remember. Just how much my life has been shaped by my experience in my home, and then how much that does influence our present partnered relationship.
I honestly think to some extent, first off, I've heard me say thrilling, and I don't even know where that came from.
Yeah. Like, wow, okay. I guess let's jump into it then.
I think though for some people, the reason I think I say that is it can feel like, oh gosh, like we have to? Like I don't really want to, or we don't need to, or like
I don't want to live in the past.
Yes. And so I think it can feel, I think we get that a lot from clients. Mm-hmm. Like, no. Like we're not doing that. And you know what? You don't have to retrace all these things. However, you will ultimately be living out of them until you do become aware of how your environment is shaping you.
Yeah.
So you have your choice back. Otherwise, you're just reacting to it or from it.
Yeah.
Always. And yeah. So then, too, is your partner.
Yeah. The only reason our past matters, in a sense, is because we so often are living in our present moment out of our past.
Correct.
And that word you said, like being reactive rather than choosing. And I think that the only way for that to shift is for us to know the story of our past, know how it invites us to keep living in that old place with those old behaviors or old ways of thinking.
Or old protective strategies.
So that we can choose otherwise. And that's not to also to say like we can learn good, healthy things
totally.
From our past too, and from our home environments. It's not just negative. So we want to be aware also of those positive things so that we can purposefully and intentionally implement them in our present so that it will impact our future. So, you know, this isn't a, you know, let's dig up all the old, painful stuff or just kind of wallow in the past. This is how can you proactively excavate your past so that your present is what you want it to be.
Right. Well, for your family.
Yeah, for your family. Yeah, and for your relationship.
Yes, because we want to do these types of things for ourselves. We want to have the best relationship with ourselves and in our own present world that we possibly can. But also, we are shaping small humans' experience.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing to them what we're talking about. Like they are living
right.
this right now. They are being shaped and molded, and their perceptions and experiences matter forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And having some intention and choice about what type of world they're growing up in is important.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're worth it. But oftentimes that's not enough. Honestly, I think a lot of parents are like, yeah, I'm fine.
Right. But I don't want to do that to my
but
kids.
But I don't want my kids
yeah.
to be negatively shaped or impacted by my reactivity or by my avoidance of conflict or by like, let's just keep sweeping stuff under the rug. Mm-hmm. It mm-hmm. worked for me. But like, I don't really want that for them. I want them to whatever.
Yeah. So kind of how this came to be. So I had mentioned in, like I said, a reel some time ago. I don't really remember when, last couple of weeks, that I grew up in a pretty critical home environment. And just from a standpoint of like how I found that shaping my experience and then impacting our partnered relationship is I think criticism in my home, like neither of my parents, you know, woke up every day and were like, hey, I want to be really critical and, you know, kind of live life that way. I think that there were some contextual things that contributed to that. You know, I think I've mentioned before, I grew up in a relatively very strict religious setting. And I think that and this, you know, if you're religious, that's great. Like, this isn't to
a commentary on that.
Yeah, this isn't to be negative towards that. I'm just trying to say how that shaped my experience. We were very, very, very concerned in our family about doing things the right way and not the wrong way, about being quote unquote holy or righteous and not quote unquote sinful or bad. And so what that did is that really kicked sort of our family into high gear of always evaluating, always looking for the bad, the mistake, the thing that wasn't going right, so that we could be good. And that just meant there was a lot of, that's wrong, you shouldn't do that, you should do this. And that spirit of criticism was just very prevalent in our religious context. And then I think also my parents, just in general, like there was a feeling of anything that was different or anything that wasn't certain or anything that didn't make sense or anything that felt outside of their frame of understanding of the world was very scary. It created a lot of insecurity. And so there was a lot of criticism of just other people, of us as kids, of one another, whatever it might be, and in a sense to try to make us fit a certain way. And again, it was that criticism was like just part of feeling insecure about unknown things. And so, you know, and that could be, you know, that translated into how I saw the world very much. And it really impacted our partnered relationship, I think significantly, and still does. But maybe I think it shifted a little bit in terms of the impact. But I think early on, I think for you, Aaron, you're always like, what is the deal?
Absolutely.
It was just like, everything's bad. Like it just creates a real negative perspective. And so in our relationship, Aaron would be experiencing me kind of looking for those mistakes, being critical of her, being critical of other people, being critical of myself. And it just felt overwhelming and not good.
So it wasn't like that all the time, right? Like I'm listening to that, like, why would I have married someone like that?
Wow.
Like, what?
Did I make a mistake?
No. I mean, I was jokingly thinking that, but it wasn't like that all the time. We were not always like that, but
sure,
there would be moments or things that would happen. And honestly, it was always very surprising to me because I think when I most was bothered by it was when it was something exciting. Or something fun, or something, you know, like people coming to visit, or, you know, some sort of celebration. Anything with like a reason to
like
be.
Like a birthday, like a camping trip,
like
a vacation, like an engagement. Yeah. Yeah.
That there was a quick, and I have learned this, but at the time I didn't see it as such, but like there, you went into protective mode,
right,
which meant critical mode.
Right.
Like, hey, we're not going to get too excited about this. This isn't going to be too fun. These people aren't that great. This isn't like easy. Mm-hmm. Like, let's not get off the charts here with some sort of excited, happy experience. Let's keep things right in the middle. And I'm going to bring this down.
A diminishment of things.
Yeah.
I think that that's one of the things criticism really does, is it diminishes experience.
Yes. If we were living a normal day, I mean, you were playful, you're funny, you know, like you've probably noticed in these, like you always can make me laugh. And so like there was this lightness, unless there was like an intentional lightness, like I said, like any sort of moment, like
yeah,
even getting dressed up for dinner would be like, yeah, it's fine.
And that,
like, oh,
and And that would go back. I mean, I remember like growing up, like I don't know what it was about, but there was just this great effort for things not to be too anything.
Right.
Too sad, too happy, too whatever it was. And that criticism was oftentimes, I remember like I would, like if I were crying, you know, there would be like, why are you crying? Like, quit crying. Or if I was really excited about something, if I was excited about, a soccer game or excited about a new activity that I wanted to, explore, there would always be this comment about like, well, probably it's going to rain today. Or why would you want to do that? You know, and it was just to kind of try and regulate that feeling of insecurity and that feeling of like, oh no, if something's too much, we're not quite sure how we can respond to it. But I feel like that's.
And I have to say, I think mostly just to get it out of my own body, I know enough about your parents' stories to be able to interpret where those things came from. I mean, we had some really good conversations with your dad about it.
Yeah, my parents are not bad people, and you know, they had their own
stories that informed that. Yes, I mean, yeah. I can see. I'm like thinking of those comments and like knowing the protective places they came from, and that is an important step to be able to do at some point. But it doesn't change how it impacted you as a kid.
You use the word protective, but like, what is the? And we used it a little bit earlier, like protective strategies or protective place, like. Can you say more about that?
So I think criticism, like what we're talking about here, the way you're talking about it is your family used criticism to protect themselves, to keep
from whatever.
Yeah.
The boogeyman, the unholiness, from things not feeling.
Well, from being criticized. I mean, honestly, I think to some extent I don't really need to get into all their stories, I guess. They're not mine to share. But there were reasons that they felt that they needed to just blend in,
normal,
don't stand out, don't do too much of anything, just like keep things steady. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. That is what would feel safe for both of them for different reasons. And honestly, who doesn't want to feel steady? It's not like a silly thing to want, but the way it was managed, I think, the way you're explaining this is highly critical. Lots of other awareness, lots of self-awareness, lots of self-consciousousness.
Very narrow emotional experience is allowed in that way. Like you're just saying, keep it stable, keep it neutral. Like not too much this, not too much that. Like
they weren't criticizing because they loved being mean and watching it hurt your feelings. They were criticizing because they thought they were helping you.
And I think they were criticizing themselves quite
all
a bit
the time.
Too.
No question. And definitely each other. Mm-hmm. And so that's a protective strategy. I think anytime you think of, I like protective strategy more than like you're so defensive. Mm-hmm. I think that's a name. Understanding that someone being defensive, be it by withdrawing, be it by talking too much. That's me. be it by being highly critical, whatever. We don't do these things to be awful. No one's trying to, like you said, no one wakes up in the morning is like, I am gonna mess my family
up. Right.
We're trying to protect ourselves, and I think that's what we're trying to figure out. From what? How did this serve us? Do I need that type of protection in this stage of my life still? Do I want that type of protective strategy for my kid? Or can I help them and endure whatever the thing is I'm trying to protect them from? I think that's one side of understanding our home environment, is this understanding that things are we had to do, figured out to do, did to get through.
To fit in, to go along with the context, to make it, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. But then I think, am I interrupting?
Well, I think, so I think that, and this is where it becomes confusing for partners, because I think that we talk to couples all the time, and I think much of what we are talking to couples about is how these home environments, how these ways their families sought to protect themselves have then come into their couple relationship and made communication difficult, intensified hurt feelings, grown resentment, all these things. And what is confusing is the path forward is to say, hey, let's understand how you were shaped by this environment in ways that are making your relationship with your partner confused right now. And then let's try and be grateful for that protective strategy, but also let's try and release it now. And that feels dangerous and that feels unsafe because it's like, but I've always done this and I've always been this way and I need this. And it's hard for partners to have that shift where it's like, you might have needed it. There might be instances still with your family where you need it or with your partner. But if your relationship is going to experience some sense of freedom, there's got to be another path for you both in terms of laying aside these protective strategies.
Or at least recognizing. I think sometimes the first step isn't laying anything aside. It's just saying like, oh, I'm doing that thing and I know why I'm doing it.
Right.
I know the feeling that's coming up that's making me feel like I need it.
But that's different because I'm still critical because I still can feel like things are too much or, you know, there's too much excitement or there's too much sadness. And I can still try and diminish those things with criticism. But I think it is we know that I do that. I know that I do that. You
can do that.
You can
I feel
say,
really resistant to feeling like you just blanket do.
Yeah,
that.
I don't do it all the time. There's moments that I do. Mm-hmm. I you know, most certainly when I'm more anxious or more stressed is when
sure.
it happens.
Okay.
And you're able to say, yeah, I feel like I've most definitely shifted, and that is not my MO necessarily anymore. Yeah. But it still happens. But what the difference is, not that they're eradicated or that I just never do that, but now we have a way of dialoguing about
totally.
The protective strategy in a way that doesn't set us off.
Yeah. And our kids.
Right.
I think that's an important piece when you get to that place. So yes, first we had to work this out. First, we both had to feel very comfortable with.
First, we had to know them.
Yes. Wait, know what?
Know what those protective strategies,
yeah.
kind of old ways.
And the stories of
things.
Why
yeah.
they came to be. Because if you don't understand that, there's no compassion for it. If I was just like, Steven's super critical of me and I just accept that about him.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's
yeah, yeah.
No. One of our kids has been saying, nope on a rope lately. And that, I feel like that right now. Nope on a rope. But knowing how you came to be that way,
yeah.
I have a great deal of compassion. I
sure.
still am not going to tolerate that. That's not
yeah.
okay.
Yeah.
I don't accept it. But I'm
right,
like,
and you don't.
Whoa, what's going on?
You don't need to, and I don't need.
No,
and I don't need.
Nope.
I don't need you to be like, oh, just oh, I'm okay with it. But I do think that idea of compassion for it is really useful because it's that idea of like, look, I know. You're not being who you want to be. You're not being
the
best. You
don't want to be this way either.
Yeah, and it's not some kind of attack where it's like, get yourself together. You're, you know.
Well, yeah, I don't have to take it personally either because
yeah.
that's how it started.
Yeah.
Was me feeling very.
Well, yeah, it's critical. I mean, yeah, of course you would take it personally.
Yes, but the other thing is I think with compassion can come curiosity. So I can be like, whoa, you have just gone to the place you go. And I know that means something big is happening.
Mm-hmm.
What is going on? Which doesn't mean I'm like, hey, tons of space here. Keep being
right,
critical.
Right, right, right.
We accept that. Like, no, but like, whoa, something's happening. Do you know what is happening? Do you need some space to figure that out? Because I can get everybody and we can give you a couple minutes.
Well, and that's an invitation too. It is a like, hey, I notice something's going on. And also I hear in it like, and we should figure that out.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, and you should figure it out because
that's not okay.
Like,
what's happening
yeah.
here isn't okay.
And mm-hmm. I think that even that, again, that's a different kind of conversation. That's how communication can break free for partners when they are feeling the weight of one another's protective strategies, mm-hmm. but they're able to say like, "Hey, it's happening." And I would like to invite you to kind of explore what's going on. And also, let's stop. Let's stop the interaction. Let's stop this experience. And I think that, you know, that's both part. You know, I think there's moments where I can realize that I'm being critical. Erin doesn't always have to cue me. Sometimes she does. But I think also I am more attuned to it as well. And I can be like, I'm kind of doing the thing, right?
You woke up this morning saying I need a reset.
Went
to sleep stressed, woke up stressed.
Yeah. And I was just like, not pleasant.
Can we reset? Well, you actually never, we never felt that.
Right. I just said, I know I'm feeling the need to not be pleasant. Sure. Yeah.
And then you did reset and it was great. But, but the other side of this that I think is very important, and I think one of the ways where couples get turned sideways is denying and diminishing the goodness from their home environment, their own and their partner's.
It's either all bad or all good.
Yes.
Not a little bit of both.
Yes. And I think that sometimes partners can feel like your family was that way, so there was nothing good about them.
Right.
And that's just not true.
Yeah, that's not true.
There
was
a lot of harm. Does that feel fair to say?
Yeah, there was a challenging environment. Okay. Yeah.
Challenging and harm. Those don't feel like the same to me, but if they feel the same to you, then okay. But also, there was goodness. I mean, I'm so thankful for you, and I'm so grateful for so many of the things.
Yeah. My parents gave us a good life. We had good environments to grow up in and good education. I had strong relationships with my siblings, and there were things that my parents did encourage me to do in terms of just like interest that I had. And
Even like some of the good things that came from a bad situation, like you're a really hard worker, and I know that is driven by criticism in your mind, and I don't like that.
Right. But my parents were also really just hard workers.
They both
in general. So yeah,
there's things like that. And I think that can be complicated, that it can be complicated to say, and I don't know how I've managed it, but we are 21 minutes in and have only talked about your home environment. But I think that can be confusing. I think that, we see it over and over and over how that can complicate. Or there are definitely partners who come in and say, like, my family is great, and I do not want to dissect or try to make them seem like they were these horrible people.
Like they were bad, right?
Yeah. And being honest about how you grew up means there are difficulties. No one is immune from that. We all have some things that were hard. Even if it's sort of like, you know, we talked to plenty of people who were like, you know, they were happy. We were happy. We had everything we needed. Like, why try to make something awful about this? And we're not trying to say that you have to say horrible trauma happened to you when it didn't. That's not the point. But there are ways you had to adapt no matter what that you may not find helpful in this current relationship. And everybody needs to be free to be able to say some of the challenges they faced in the home they grew up in that aren't any longer helping them in this home, and some of the beauty. And sometimes partners just look and say, like, your family is just blank, or they're just they're too involved, they're so overwhelming, they're, I don't know, whatever it is, doesn't really matter. Well, it does matter a lot, but everybody should get to be able to feel there's goodness too. And that also shapes
goodness,
who you are.
Goodness doesn't negate challenge, and challenge doesn't negate goodness. There is a balance.
It's just honest, right?
Right. And I think that, you know, we can get in that tug of war, or partners can get in that tug of war. I guess we observe it. We're not in the tug of war, but we observe it where there is this idea of, you know what, I'm only going to say my family was awesome.
And you're only allowed to say my family was awesome.
Right. And I think that, again, the idea is, everyone has stress and everyone has anxieties, and we all have ways of coping with it. And some of those ways are helpful, and some of them aren't. And I think that at the basic level, when everyone experiences and learns positive and negative ways of coping with stress and anxiety, and when you're in your partnered relationship, you're bringing those ways into your relationship. And if you're unwilling to examine, like, what might be some of the negative ways, you're going to be in a tug of war with your partner that isn't going to go anywhere.
One of the examples, I think, just to give like some, you know, teeth to this, is conflict. We talk to so many people that say, my parents didn't show conflict. Mm-hmm. And I am fine with that. Like, I don't need this like high conflict. Oh, so now we just are supposed to fight all the time. Right. Or I'm supposed to say this was this terrible thing. But an impact of never having seen conflict is feeling like it must be terrifying, that conflict must be so bad that we never do it.
Right.
And the point isn't to be in this like high conflict house like Stephen was talking about, or a no conflict house. The point is to show that conflict doesn't have to be scary at all. I disagree. You do? That's interesting. Tell me more. Right. Oh, wow. I still don't agree, but I can see how you'd get there. Done with conflict. Like, it doesn't have to be all or nothing.
Right.
And I think that that's one of those examples. Like, so you expect me to say that never having seen conflict was awful and, mm-hmm. you know, those types of experiences.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I think the goal is here is to try and understand just how you've been shaped by your experience. And for many of us, one of the most formative contexts for who we are as people is how we grew up, where we grew up. And to be thoughtful about that and to be balanced about it, here's some of the things that are healthy and positive. Here's some of the things that are maybe unhealthy and negative, is vital to you and your partner being able to progress in your relationship. Because if there's not an awareness of that, you will be living your life in a reactionary manner.
Absolutely.
And what begins to happen is you will be reacting against your partner, and that's where things begin to feel adversarial and lonely and hurt and resentful and all of those things.
Or the other thing that I think we see, and tell me if you think this is right, you feel like you have to just go with everything your partner says and go against yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that is equally lonely and unmooring, you know, like where it's like, well, I don't actually dislike everything I think, and I don't want to have to abandon every, you know, my family, my story, myself, to just agree with you and your way of saying how we should do things. That doesn't feel any better. Do you think that is?
Yeah. I mean, I think it looks a lot of different ways, and that is definitely one of the other, I guess, alternatives. Either, you know, it builds resentment.
Honestly,
you know, in the end.
I felt like that. Now that I'm like, what am I reading this in? Like, me, when you would want to minimize the celebration, like, oh, this makes Stephen uncomfortable, we should just mute it. Like,
right,
let's turn this down. Well, that didn't last long for me. I was not, but I did try for a while to be like, okay, we can like not be that excited. This cannot be that fun. Let's not be thrilled about that.
And how that worked out for us is I think I didn't realize that's what I was asking you to do, or you felt like I was asking you to do.
Because I never said that out loud. Right. I just felt it.
I wasn't. Like, what happened is, this is, you know, how our family context, you know, something really positive and healthy from your family in terms of celebrating and being excited about, you know, occasions and events and those kinds of things.
Thursdays.
You know, the morning, breakfast, you know, whatever it is, intersected with my experience that was where my experience was skewed. And I think you would even say, like, sometimes even that that excitement, not that that was ever wrong, but sometimes that could also cause a tendency not to look at the reality of maybe something being challenging, you know? And so,
no question, that is where it came from.
Right. But for us, how that intersected is, I learned, like, oh, like, you don't have to be critical. You don't have to diminish. You don't have to do these things. Like that became a strategy, a protective strategy that I just didn't need anymore.
The other thing that I learned is I'm allowed to celebrate even if Stephen doesn't feel like it.
Right.
And that felt very uncomfortable to me. I felt like...
Right, because something you learned in your home context is that you did need to just morph to whatever the needs of
someone else.
Right, and so...
I mean, talk about... So here we go, minute 28, we finally got there. About, yeah, I had a mentally unstable dad who used opioids to self-medicate. And that was like, okay, so where are we? What's going on? Who do we need to be?
Right.
And then I had another side of the family where it was joy only.
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm. So you just had to morph to whatever they needed, right?
Totally.
And so that's, and so you're doing that. You're reenacting that protective strategy.
We're not happy about this. Right. We're not that happy. How happy are we? Okay,
right.
Okay. Got it. But I never said any of that out loud until I got to an 11.
We got really mad and we had conflict and we had arguments and disagreements about it.
Like, I've been doing this for a long time.
Right.
And I'm tired. I want to be happy if I'm happy.
Right.
And you're like, oh, I never meant for you to be doing that.
Right. And then I was kind of like, and who knew you could just be, you could be happy. Hey, that's a good, that sounds nice. And so I think that through the conflict, which was uncomfortable, which was ongoing, mm-hmm. which didn't get resolved the first time we had the conflict, what happened for us is we said, oh, how have our past contexts mm-hmm. shaped how we're experiencing our interactions as partners? And then we go, huh, well, I don't want to do that. I don't
have to minimize myself to keep you happy.
Yeah, and I'm
fantastic.
Like, I don't have to look at the world like everything's, you know, falling apart and just depressing and awful. Oh, and so then we can have different choices. And so I can wake up today and feel like I'm looking at the world like everything's falling apart and be like, you know what? I don't have to do that today.
And you naming that never once, even for a small millisecond, made me think like, okay, we got to just like make sure dad has everything he needs today, right. guys. Let's just like, hey, give dad space. Like,
right, right.
We just moved on with our day. And I, because I trusted that you would take care of yourself.
Right.
In that.
Right. And so, you know, that, and I think that that is an ongoing process for partner relationships. We are always navigating our past, evaluating how it's shaping our present, and then saying, do we want that this to be the case? Can we choose something else? But if we are unwilling to look at our past, we really can't move forward. And I think much of like our work with couples is helping them be comfortable with the process of looking at their past, not because, you know, not to get them lost in it, but to help them be intentional and have choice in their present,
yes.
which gives them the future together that they want. So I think that, again, that's why it's important to consider these things and to be aware of them.
I was just talking with one of our kids yesterday about how important it is to do things that do make you uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you find is, one, it's almost never as uncomfortable as you thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And two, it gets you pretty good at being comfortable with discomfort, which is where healing and growth are.
And you have such a sense of empowerment and agency when you do that.
It's just not that uncomfortable anymore. Yeah. Like, oh,
I can do hard things and I can have a life that I want.
Mm-hmm.
And we as partners can have a life that we want, a family that we want, when we do these hard things that are hard, but not as hard as you think they are. If you and your partner are wanting to know how your past is impacting your present and keeping you from choosing the future you want, we can help. Go to couplescounselingforparents.com and click on the Work With Us tab, or email us at info@couplescounselingforparents.com to learn more about our couples coaching. Today's show was produced by Aaron and Stephen Mitchell. If you're enjoying the podcast, please hit the follow button and leave us a rating. This helps our content become more visible to others who might enjoy it, and it lets us know how we can keep improving the show. And as always, we're grateful for you listening. Thanks so much for being with us here today on Couples Counseling for Parents. And remember, working on a healthy couple relationship is good parenting.